Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show, everybody. Very excited for today. This is sort of unlike any episode. Daniel, how is this unlike any episode that we've ever done here? Well, first, it's the first time it's we.
Yes.
I just used a we.
Yeah, there we go. I'm not in the golf business.
You're not?
No, I'm not really affiliated with golf. I'm just an enthusiast, I think. I know you've had enthusiasts. I think everyone on here is probably pretty enthusiastic about golf, but also probably in the golf business in some way or another.
If you're listening, you're wondering why is he on the podcast?
I'm an outsider. I'm a disruptor.
The truth is, I feel like my microphone is all right, but, I think, you know, we've been friends for a long time. And so if you're listening and you're wondering how did Daniel get on the podcast, it's basically like, if we're friends long enough, you just click over.
I'm just chipping away at him. I've been asking forever. I don't think he really expected. I sort of came over like offering coffee.
Yeah. It was like there was a lot of gifts involved. There's a gift basket that, then just so you know, if you want to get on the pod.
He is for sale. He is for sale.
I think you may already realize why Daniel Libman is on the podcast. If I can, I think, you know, a lot of the podcast guests that are on the show are somehow involved in bringing golf to people, whether that's as a teacher or a, you know, golf course architect or player or writer. You're none of those. You're none of those, but you're not just a friend of mine that plays golf, because I have a lot of friends that play golf. I think there's two things that made me feel like it would be a good conversation for people to listen to. One is that, well, first of all, we met in the most purely golf random, I'm obsessed with the game way.
Our origin story couldn't be sweeter.
It's actually, you're a writer, you write movies. We basically have our own cute meet.
Yeah, it's a rom-com. I'm on the range at Angeles National. What year is this?
Oh, man.
What driver do I have? That's the way to tell. Is it a G? It's an early ping G, yeah. Series. So I don't know when that puts us.
It was loud.
I was making noise over there. I was making plenty of noise over there.
It was no sim. To be fair, you play a sim now.
Oh yeah.
And you're not even that. You're not that. That was you.
No,
got
I'm also for sale. So if you're listening, I'll put anything in the bag. I'll go to Yonex if the price is right.
They don't make clubs yet.
And I see this sort of scruffy.
I've never heard your version of the story.
Almost doesn't belong. but he's got a sweetness behind his eyes. And we start chatting. I think we're both cleaning our clubs after we had sort of. You know that thing when you're on the range and you see kind of someone else that's like. And you're kind of eyeing him out of the, you know, right. Back of your eye.
That guy's cool.
Yeah, that guy's cool. He's cool. He seems like he gets it.
Could he maybe be in my life?
I don't know. Here's the thing. At the time, and still this is my theory to this day, is like I'm not looking for more friends.
Right.
I'm not actively looking to make friends. I'm a nice guy. Nice enough.
You're married.
Yeah, I'm married.
You've got a friend.
My dance card's full. Let's put it that way.
Can we paint the Angeles National picture for those of us not in Los Angeles?
Sure. This is a Jack Nicklaus design at the foothills of the Angeles National Forest.
It's the only Nicklaus in Southern California, I believe.
I believe so. It's fine. It's like, fine. It's fine. Like, if you want to... Like, it's fine. It's you're tired of playing the sort of L.A. municipal... run.
Yeah.
You're ready to spend a few bucks. It's not cheap.
No.
But
it's not crazy expensive though. I think it's like a little over 100 on a Saturday. You can get out on a Friday for 50.
Yeah. And if you go golf now, I think you can get it for like $48. Like, I don't think they're getting tons of traffic. But it is also one of the only grass ranges in LA. So the purists know, just like you just find people out there practicing, the good short game facility, good practice range.
And it's a good grass range. There's another grass range in Woodley, which is more of a dirt range.
That's more like a tin cup.
You need style. You needed a face mask at Woodley pre-coronavirus.
Yeah, they would be. Yeah, it was too dusty, and I think there was armadillos.
So yeah, Angeles was like the known spot, and they had a range key. They still do.
They had a range key that you could like, yes, it was like a, what was it, like a membership to the range or
yeah.
something?
Yeah. Oh, I slammed that thing. I would just max it out.
Yeah.
And then the problem with the range key is if you lose it.
Oh, yeah. Because you can never be like, hey, I lost my range key. He's like, yeah, get in line, buddy. And there's like 15 guys in the pro shop being like, me too.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But the clasp on the range key was not well made.
No, it was bad. The whole system was bad. And I don't miss it.
Here's the interesting part of the story. I mean, I don't want to fast forward, but we're talking about Angeles in the past tense.
Yeah.
It still exists, but you and I have, we don't exist in that place.
Our relationship has moved past that, I think, in ways that we're flourishing. And
so we're on the range, and we're both basically, it's probably a Saturday morning, hot morning, 10 a.m., 9 a.m.
A lot of other people are playing golf. We're just there to practice. So that tells you a lot about someone, you know? It's like a lot of people are like hit six balls and go to play.
Yeah.
We're there like truly grinding.
You know, you can eat, any golfer who's been playing for a little bit can tell the difference between someone who's only on the range or someone who's getting ready to play.
And who's there Saturday morning. Like that's the prime time to play golf. Everyone's there to play.
You can't afford to play golf. You probably don't have a girlfriend.
Yeah, no. It was dark days.
And the other thing is that they've got an amazing like short game facility there. Like sometimes when I was really low, I wouldn't even hit the range. I would just go chip
and just drop some balls. just drop a few scuffers and hit some pitches. By the way, you think I didn't do that? That was great.
I wish we had like a heat map of like who's doing what on the course. Also, you know, interesting fact about Angeles National, there was that one tee. There was a separate tee that no one was allowed to
use. For Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah, for Hideki.
Exclusively. I saw Hideki hitting balls there one day. It was so windy that one of his handlers had to hold his golf bag upright. This is not a joke. He couldn't get it to stand up. And the driving range, the reason they built the tee was because the driving range is directly into the wind.
Yeah.
And pros don't like that.
No.
But he didn't care this day and was hitting golf shots into the wind that I can only describe as disheartening. How good they were. How good they were. Like I was hitting balls that were like ballooning and coming back to my feet. And he was like mashing it to the other end of the range.
He had some different tech.
The whole vibe. So I'm sitting there and I'm cleaning my clubs and Lang comes up. And he starts flirting. And we started to talk. And, you know, it was clear right off the bat. We were very like-minded. We had a lot in common. Even though we didn't know anyone in common,
Oh, there were no mutuals.
No, it's a compliment. It's like you feel like you know someone even though you don't.
Right. You mean because you both play golf or because...
I think a little bit of it is that. But I think there's just... I don't know whether it's something from a past life or
could be
what it is. I don't know.
So maybe I was your caddy in a past life.
or I was yours. No, I think there's just some kinship that exists with certain folks that you just like someone right off the bat. And there's, you know, I don't know. Yes. Golf, I think is the great common denominator. And we then made plans to play golf like you would do with any schmuck that you meet. It was we should play sometime.
We literally went out and played golf after this?
No, we exchanged numbers.
Okay.
And we were like, we should play sometime. And normally, it would be like, well, that's never going to happen. Ever, because why would it?
This is great because I don't actually remember this detail.
And then I think
this is a long time. I think this is like 7 years ago.
At least.
This is way before any of my work in golf.
Yes. You were not working in golf at all.
Yeah.
No. You were relatively new to the game at the time, which I remember I was so impressed because you definitely had some ability.
I probably was wearing super baggy thrift store pants Anyway, so we exchanged numbers and we made plans.
Definitely was before your glow up. Your glow up in golf.
Before I got a trim.
Yeah. And then, I remember we went out and we played golf at Angeles one morning. It was very cold, but we did it and we had a great time.
Was it just the two of us? Did we get paired with two other randoms?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
But we actually did it, and that was the shock of a universe, because I was like, because I remember being like, telling people, like, yeah, I'm going to play golf. They're like, oh, with who? One of the usual people you play golf with? No, this guy I met. Everyone's like, what is going on?
I have no verification of this person.
Yeah, what is going on?
Instagram was barely a thing then. Like,
I don't believe it was.
Like, maybe we took a photo. This is like iPhone 1 or maybe 3, 2.
Yeah, this is early. Ping G2 shit. Yeah,
this is early. I don't even know. I probably had a, my first driver was a burner. I might have had the burner.
I don't remember what you were rocking, but it was relatively...
It wasn't the problem. Let's put it that way.
It was relatively like, yeah, you didn't have a clean...
It was mid-level.
It wasn't clean. It was, yeah.
Yeah. So let me go play golf, and then what, do years pass, or...
I think I don't remember. Then I saw you at a wedding.
Wait, a wedding?
Yeah, I saw you at a wedding that I was at Ojai. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I think that's when we were like, bro, that was fun when we played golf.
Whoa, that's so crazy.
We should play again. And I think that's the next time I saw you.
That's right. The wedding. See, I don't, the wedding doesn't really register to me because that wedding I wasn't invited to.
Yeah, you were at the resort when there was a very prominent wedding going on. That was probably 90% of the resort were guests of the wedding.
Yeah. And I was a guest of the wedding who I was dating, and she didn't really, it was so last minute. Like, the invite to come to the wedding from her was like Friday, and the wedding was on Saturday. And I was like, she said, well, you know, maybe just hang out in the room while the wedding happens and then come to the reception.
Yeah. And then I saw you, I think, on the grounds, and I was like, what is up, bro?
Oh my God. Yeah, that's right. And then if we can fast forward.
Yeah.
I joined Wilshire.
Yes.
And thanks to the woman that I was dating at the time, she said, let's join Wilshire. I said, are you aware of what that means?
you're a hero.
Yeah. That and she was like, no problem. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, but so then my life changed.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had the first day of joining a member.
You brought me out there for a little bit. Then I joined.
And I knew that you were trying to join.
Yeah.
And or going through the process.
Yeah.
There's no try. There's only do.
Yeah.
As we know.
Yeah. Well, if you have $4, they'll take you.
Actually, it is an interesting fact that you can join Wilshire as a completely disconnected member.
Yeah. Diplomat. You can join.
How did you join in the end?
I worked with a gentleman named Adrian Wenner, who him and his wife are both... they're writers and directors and very talented people and also very talented golfers, both single-digit handicaps. I worked on a show with Adrian. The first day of the show, we're walking down the hall toward each other. We had never met. I have my grandpa's 1962 ping putter and a bag of balls, and he has like two Cleveland wedges and a bunch of balls, and I was like, this guy's going to be my best friend.
Wait, you met, that was where?
On a show. That was our first day of a show.
You were walking on set?
No, we were walking into the writer's room.
And you both had golf
gear? And we both had golf shit for our offices, because I bring my grandpa's 1962 ping putter to every job that I have, because I need a putter in my office, and it's sort of my, like...
Oh, so it's day one, and you're moving
into the office. It's like my blankie. It's like my blankie.
I got it.
Yeah.
So... Then you basically...
So he started to take me there before even you joined.
Right.
And the second I was not doing well enough at the time, but that was like, I was like, oh, this place, I gotta get here.
One of the interesting things that we haven't really discussed yet is this small detail of manifestation.
Sure.
I remember distinctly that you and I played several rounds of golf before either of us joined Wilshire. And I remember us talking about Wilshire.
Yeah.
As though it was the promised land, as though, you know, like one day,
baby.
Yeah. And then having it actually happen for both of us individually is kind of ridiculous, actually.
Yeah. It's, look, I think, I don't know if it's manifestation or if it's just priorities being completely out of whack. Depends who you ask.
I mean, yeah, it also depends on the time of your life.
Sure, yeah. I think it's all about life stages. I think if it's something that means a lot to you and something that you'll use, are there other things I could probably spend my money on? Sure, but are there things that make me as happy as, you know, basically doing the equivalent of what we were doing at Angeles, but closer to my house. And, you know, like that, it was so clear at the time. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that you and I became friends, that this was something that made us both so happy, right? That was, brought us so much joy, that you would take a Saturday morning when other people were doing whatever, and then we would drive an hour and a half away from our house to go find, you know, the only piece of grass in Los Angeles to hit some balls. You know, that to me seems like, well, that's something that drives me, something that makes me happy, something that gives me peace of mind. So yeah, it makes sense that I would, you know, make that a priority in my life. Right. I think it's important.
Yeah, it's almost like the way you golf says so much about you. And I mean, I know that that's been said a lot, but it's almost like, you know, how you treat your golf, and not so much how you behave on the golf course from a personality standpoint, but it's almost like, how do you golf? You know what I mean? And we've both gone through this. I guess the interesting thing is there are a lot of friends that I've kind of also coincidentally of yours met throughout the years. Is it Andy Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys, were you close when you grew up together?
No, barely know.
Barely knew him.
Barely knew.
But fried egg, you grew up in Chicago. Did that have any, you know, Andy always talks about, you know, golf course architecture being the craft beer of golf, this kind of like fascination. Did he have an impact on you? Because I know you're really interested in architecture.
I am, but I never was the sort of vocal member of this like new sort of woke golf culture that I appreciate and love. I think one of the reasons that I loved golf from a very early age was this concept that I call good ghosts.
Never heard this before.
And I think, look, you walk on, what's your favorite old golf course you've ever played?
Western Gales.
Sure. You walk there and you walk on the property and you can feel the good ghosts, right? You can feel, you can see the people, centuries past walking the grounds. You can just, it's a feeling that you get. And I think that's just, you can't really replicate that in any other thing, or at least I haven't been able to. When you walk onto an old golf course, you feel the presence of the people that were there before you. And I think that I think that's what this whole sort of nostalgia golf course, you know, architecture reverence is really about. I think, yes, there was a better way of doing it before, but I think we're all just sort of chasing those good ghosts.
You know, I think that's something, it's interesting how you put it that way. Like I'm sure, like maybe I've thought about something kind of like that, but to like go into trying to explain it and maybe even be more aware of it as you like travel, is interesting to think about. Have you played Santa Anita?
No.
What are you doing tomorrow morning?
Let's go.
Let's roll.
6:30.
So, well, I guess we should just talk about this on a different podcast, but it's supposed to be money. And you know who told me to play it?
Who?
Andy Johnson.
Oh, yeah. He played it, I think, with a couple people when he came out here.
Yeah. There's an article about it in McKellar. Have you heard of this magazine?
No.
So you've got Golfer's Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a subscriber?
Yes.
Good. If you're listening and you haven't subscribed, press pause, go to Golfer's Journal, support Brendan's magazine. It's incredible.
But then come right back, press play and bump it loud.
Bump it. And then there's also Caddy Mag. My buddy Will in Melbourne makes that magazine happen. But there's also a new one called McKellar, and they're on their issue 3. And it's pretty rad. I ordered all 3 issues. So they have an article about, in the newest one, about Santa Anita. And it's this design that's very, Jeff Shackelford actually wrote the article. And it's by an architect who's only designed one golf course, and that was Santa Anita.
Amazing.
And there's like,
that's my, so my goal. That's so my goal. Just give me any place and let me do one design.
Apparently, do you want to go tomorrow? Are you serious?
I think I can. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me know.
I'm down.
You know, it's supposed to be like, it's only 6,300 yards.
Great.
But it's supposed to be totally interesting.
Perfect.
And apparently it's only 30 minutes from LA.
Who knew?
I would have, yeah. I mean, it's like, here I need a guy in Chicago to tell me where to go in LA. So I love those guys. Okay, so your golf game, you're really good. If you're talking to someone and they say, "Are you good at golf?" and they don't know anything about golf, what do you say?
I'd say I try hard.
That's not usually a good thing.
I would say I try hard.
You really do.
I do.
I
think golf is the most sincere thing I do. I'll play golf and I'll come off the course and be like, I didn't really joke around that much. Like,
this is making me think of the 14th hole or the 13th. No, 14th. Yeah, par five. We had our first and only fight, really.
What was it?
The speaker.
Oh, the speaker. God. The speaker. Oh, no.
It was just the three of us, right? Or was it four?
The woke golf community is going to come for me for this, bro. This is not a good look. Look, well, I stand by it. Whatever. Let's go. Tell it.
You're a changed man.
I'm somewhat reformed, I would say. Look, but I'm open-minded.
Hey, we all change. Yeah. Look, when we played golf at Rustic last week, and I noticed on your bag you had clipped to it something that was essentially contraband in the Libman household, a speaker.
Yeah.
What happened on this day? By the way, for reference, what's your handicap?
I'm a one handicap. One to somewhere in there.
He's a one, folks. You've broken par dozens of times.
Oh.
Maybe hundreds.
Yeah.
Lowest at Wilshire, 66. 66. That's five under, guys. So just to give you reference, Daniel is a much better golfer than me. Much more accomplished. We have made money together, by the way.
Lots of money. Yeah. We have a good white men can't jump hustle because I'll pull Lang off the bench. That guy? Yeah, him. Yeah.
I can make a few birdies. I can also make a few doubles.
Sure.
So I'm not going to do any career low, but I have, you know, spurts of greatness.
It's a great, great, great gambling partner. Also, the vibes are just high off vibes. The charts.
Spurts of greatness maybe should go on my headstone.
Spurts of greatness. Spurts of greatness.
Not the Michael Jordan documentary. So we're on the 13th, and I decide that my game is meaningless to me at this point. You did not feel the same way, and when I started to power up my Bluetooth speaker, and I think I was probably playing something, maybe like something like some 80s song.
Something.
It didn't go with your golf game.
No, it was like you were playing like the Top Gun soundtrack or something.
It was something like that.
Look, here's the deal.
Dying.
When I go to play golf, I don't also need to hear music. I have times in my life when I listen to music. Like, well, how would you feel? Okay. How's this? I'm playing golf with you, and I'm like, I'm going to put on The Daily.
What was that, a show?
The New York Times podcast. I'm going to put on a podcast. Is that?
Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense. To be fair,
is that kosher?
If there has been a crossover of any, maybe it's this one, is that I don't listen to music on the golf course anymore. There's no speaker on my bag. I have actually turned away from who I was, and and you now carry a speaker.
I carry a speaker because...
It's like safety?
Yeah, sometimes. No, I carry a speaker because I will walk 9 holes with my wife. And it makes it a more enjoyable experience for her.
Right.
Because she's not as good. Sometimes she won't even bring her clubs.
Yeah.
And she'll just walk with me. So I find it to be a more sort of, romantic.
And
I'm a great husband, guys.
Do you also play the Top Gun soundtrack?
Only exclusively. I'm like, have you ever heard D'Angelo's Voodoo?
Yeah, it was interesting because you were basically you said turn that off.
I said in so many words. I said in so many words. Please turn that off.
Turn that off.
And people in the group were shocked.
They were shocked. They were not on your side.
No, absolutely not. We're with my brother-in-law Brian Rubin at the time, and he was like, "Bro, chill." And it wasn't like I was playing bad. It wasn't anything. I was just like, I don't come to the golf course to listen to music in such a lo-fi capacity, too. Yeah, it's not a good speaker.
Would you, if I had given you Bluetooth headphones, like Bose headphones, it wouldn't have. That's the interesting thing is why don't, if someone, if you want to listen to music on the course, bring some headphones.
Bring some headphones.
That's interesting.
It's also a small yard, so it's like, I don't like being across the fairway from someone and hearing like from like 300 yards away, like,
yeah,
you know, like
just a hint of
Bob Marley. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, cool.
One of the problems with it is it's Bluetooth, and the Bluetooth connection, when it gets disrupted, is worse than just not listening to anything.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
I will say, I did play golf. I played Rustic about a week ago with my buddy Josh Adams and his friend Nate. And on about the fifth hole, they said to me and we were, and my friend Andrew, also a writer, and I said, and they said to the two of us, they came to us with a proposal. Do you mind if we play music? We play music. Now, sure. can you imagine what was about to happen?
They were going to bring out instruments? It sounds like they were about to start performing.
No, they
hey, do you mind if we play a couple of our folk originals?
This instrument happens to perfectly fit. A recorder and a ukulele.
Yeah.
Jew's harp, is that what it's called? The thing that goes in the mouth?
I think.
They had linked Bluetooth speakers.
Wow, for like a stereo effect.
It was incredible.
That's adorable.
It was incredible.
That is adorable.
Like, here's the thing. If you were standing between their bags,
yeah,
it was almost jarring.
It's so loud.
Not loud, just so perfect. It was incredible.
Yeah, look, I don't mean to talk out of both sides of my mouth, but if the sound quality was a little better, I might change my mind. Look, I'm a bit of a purist in a couple ways. That's one of them.
Yeah.
I think if it's like you're going to play a few holes and it's long shadows in the afternoon and you want some tunes, fine. But if you're playing in a game and people are trying to make a score, I don't, I'm also very specific about my music. Like, right. I don't want your music.
You have
like,
style.
I want my music.
Have you ever DJed?
No.
Would you?
100%.
We just talked on, before the podcast started, we talked about playlists. Yeah. How many playlists do you have?
I don't have that many playlists. I'm not like a guy. I used to be a guy that would sit and make a playlist, but now
like
I feel like
during MP3 days.
Yeah, but now I feel like Spotify just knows me so well that they just kind of know. I pick one song and they're like, "Here's 1,000 like it."
Yeah,
you're like, you get the vibe.
You've paid them to know exactly who you are.
Spotify, take the wheel.
Yeah, I don't understand when people use Apple Music.
It look, I love the company, if you're listening. I'm assuming you're listening. It's a great company.
I mean, this podcast but is on Apple and Spotify.
But here's the thing. Spotify, they only do one thing. You trust the company that only makes one thing.
That's a really good point. They know what they're... also like the interface. I like the black and green.
It's just... yeah, it's a good look.
Also, I like... I haven't done it really in weeks, but the weekly... whatever they call it. What is
Discover Weekly.
Discover Weekly.
Yeah, they know you.
That's good.
They know you. That their algorithm
and
is
not only do
top.
They know you, but they know who you're going
to
be.
They know exactly who I'm going to be. They know to turn the music off when I get to the golf course.
So good. Let's go through pet peeves on the golf course. Here's the thing about Daniel. And You're obviously very smart. You're very funny.
That's very kind.
But what that translates to in for your personality is, it may seem like an opinion, but really it's a recommendation. You know what I mean? And actually, one of the most profound moments that I've ever had with you was we were going to the first tee at Wilshire, and there's a tunnel there. And we're going through the tunnel. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I changed
and
your life.
You blew my mind. He blew my fucking mind because we're walking, and I go, "Nice pants." And you said, "These are the best golf pants that I've ever been made." And I was like, "Well, what are they?" And you're like, "I'm all five pocket." And are you still?
Yeah.
You're still all five pocket.
The five pocket, yeah.
Okay, break down why the five pocket.
Here's the thing. The non-five pocket is for someone who works in an office in the Midwest. It's simply a dorkier look.
Right.
No offense to the people who are... what is it? Is it two pocket?
I guess it's just
a traditional slack.
Yeah.
Maybe it's too formal of an attire for golf.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I think... I think we can be respectful of the game, but still be casual and like the way we look. Like, I don't want to wear a slack to a, you know, everyday round. Like, look, if I'm going to a special place that is sort of that I want to be extra respectful.
Are you wearing five pockets if you were to go play Cyprus? Just want to throw that out there. I mean, I'm just curious because you said special place.
I mean, you're still in California.
True.
Augusta? I think so. I think I'd wear Augusta. No way.
No way.
No way. I think tuxedo.
What do you wear?
I think tuxedo with pants.
The stripe?
With the stripe.
Like G4.
No, I think I take the pants from my wedding tux, and I strap them on and I go play. I think I might wear the jacket too.
The whole thing.
The whole thing, dude.
Athletic tuxedo or just straight up wool?
Bespoke, most expensive thing I own, tuxedo. Like wearing a Ferrari.
Let's go.
It's
so good. Wait, by the way, I played golf with someone in a tuxedo.
That's you. Where you were wearing a tuxedo or they
were? Someone else. At Winter Park, we had an RGC event, and it's team play, so it's an alternate shot. So my partner, on the ninth hole of Winter Park, there's like a chapel, and he sprays it far right, and there's a wedding going on. And so everyone on the tee, and I've got 50 guys on the tee, and everybody on the tee yells
that
four.
That bride is probably like, tight. Thanks. Thank you so much.
It wasn't the husband. It wasn't the groom. But anyway, imagine 50 golfers on the tee yelling four to another group of 50 people all dressed up drinking champagne. And what's the name of the guy who does the wedding? The pastor?
Sure.
The, you know, whatever.
Sure. It's like the best friend.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
It's the roommate.
Anyone can get verified for that. It's easier than Instagram. And so he comes out and he's like, you guys, what is going on here? 50 people playing golf. And we tell him, and then he's like, do you mind if I, can I? So I give him my club and he whacked it. But that would be an appropriate Augusta outfit. What hat? Are you going to wear a hat? Because how does a hat go with a tux?
To Augusta? I think you got to wear like a Chi-Chi Rodriguez style.
Like a pork pie.
Yeah, or like a something.
Right.
Look, here's the thing with golf, with my attire. I want to be able to go somewhere else before or after golf and not feel like a loser.
Don't we all? Unfortunately for me, depending on how I score. I mean, that's you raise an interesting point, and it brings up one of these phrases to me that kind of makes me cringe nowadays, on and off the golf course.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to change my shoes.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Yeah, I'm going to change my shoes.
Yeah, you're going to...
Well, it's also like, look, here's the deal. After golf, you should shower. So, like, in theory, that would give you an opportunity to change, right?
Right. But showering is a private thing.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like private club.
Yeah. But, yes, if you're going to just go out for beers or whatever with your buddies after.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would like to, I'd like to be respectful, but I'd like to, I think a five pocket is my way of sort of incorporating my everyday style into my golf game. You know what I mean? Like, if someone saw me playing golf, they'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense that he would wear that for golf instead of like he's wearing a costume.
So unsponsored favorite pair of five pocket pants for golf right now.
Okay, guys, got a new pant recently, a new five pocket that I think takes the cake.
Were you wearing these the other day? Did I see these?
The Grayson Twill five pocket is a fantastic product.
Not a jogger.
No, not a jogger. It's just a nice slim fit. It's twill, so it's not like too performancey.
To give you guys an idea of Daniel, you stance on joggers, you try them. I've seen you wear them. Are you confirmed on this?
I didn't wear like the jogger that has like the cuff on the bottom.
Okay.
I wore like a elastic bottom pant.
Okay.
Briefly.
Brief. It was brief.
Yeah, it was a short experiment. Guys, here's the thing. Sometimes you take risks and you swing and you miss.
This makes me think of your golf game, right? I've seen you pull off shots that I, you're 18 in Wilshire. There's this little double palm tree. On the other side of it is a creek. On the other side of it is the green.
And so, another creek beyond that.
Yeah. And you have no swing and you bank it off the tree.
You were there for that.
I videoed it, and Michelle Wee messaged me and said, that was incredible.
That was, and I made the putt.
You made the putt. You got a par in 18 at Wilshire if you played it. It's not always.
That was one of the coolest moments. I'm so glad that you were there for that.
I have it
that
on my phone right now.
Such artistry.
What's your typical, what's your scoring average on 18 at Wilshire?
That hole?
Yeah.
I've gone stretches where I can't make a par on that hole.
Right.
I can't
make a par. It's like crazy. It's not even that hard of a hole, but
no,
it is.
There's something about the angle. There's something about the way that the fairway is pitched away from you, but you kind of have to still hit a draw.
And the wind is usually
sometimes
crossing
to the left. Yeah. So it's like it fights it. Yeah, no, I've gone through stretches where I truly will play for five on that hole and walk off and be fine.
Have you ever played up 17?
No.
It feels unethical.
Yeah, it feels, I don't like that. Yeah. There's also so much room down there.
Yeah.
But there's, yeah, I've gone through stretches where I absolutely, that hole has defeated me.
We're going to take a quick break, everybody. Stay tuned. All right, we're back. Yeah. So what, how far do you hit the ball?
Not far enough.
Oh, come on.
I'm in the 300 range. I'm in the 300 range.
You're a 300 plus.
Yeah.
On a cold morning, no swings, you're going maybe 295, but most likely at least 302.
I'm in the three bills range. Yeah. It's far enough. But not like when you play with guys that really hit it far. And then you're like, I don't hit it anywhere.
He's talking about web.com players. Corn Ferry Tour.
Yeah, I'm talking about those guys. I'm talking about guys that really move it.
You, your swing is most like?
A broken down car.
No, it's not. A person.
My swing is most like, I would like to think, John Rahm.
Yeah, okay. It's either Rahm or Finau. You really, that club does not get near parallel.
No, I don't have a very long backswing, and I have a very aggressive action towards the ball.
How do you generate that club head speed?
Will.
Sheer will.
Sheer will. Yeah. Lower body, I think. I think I have a stronger lower half, and I try to move it.
You've taken so many steps to work on your game. I've seen you, we've talked throughout the years, we've talked about clubs, you know, grooves, bounce.
Fitness.
Trail relief.
Yeah.
We've talked about, you know, smash factor, launch angle. We've talked about everything. We've talked about the types of practice we do. You have rubber bands in your bag that you used to stretch with on the tee.
I do.
This man is taking the game seriously. What have you found has had the most impact, if anything? Is there any one thing that's had a large impact on your game?
Yeah, decade golf.
What's that? I don't know what that is.
Decade golf is a course management system, I guess you would call it, by this gentleman named Scott Fawcett. I'm sure a lot of the listeners out here know it.
I've never heard of this.
If you don't know it, you are leaving shots on the course. I'm serious.
Really?
It is truly, it is a remarkable, remarkable system and way to manage your way around a golf course and know that you're making the right decisions.
Simply put things like
picking targets, knowing what club to hit off the tee on any given hole.
There's say picking a target, like give someone a taste.
Okay. I have 150 yards into a hole. There's a baseline number that you aim away from the flag side that the flag is on. So if that number is 9, which it is at 150 yards. This is all based on like your normal shot dispersion.
Oh, this is quite mathematical.
But it's very simple actually. So let's just say the pin is the number is 9. The pin is 5 from the left. You're aiming 4 right of that. Every time.
The pin is 5 from the on the left edge.
Yeah.
So you're aiming left middle.
So you're aiming 4 paces to the right of that because you're aiming 9 from the left edge.
Because 9 yards?
Yeah.
So it's basically from 150, you are 9 yards inaccurate.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to get the ball on the green.
Exactly.
Right.
So you're going to pull it. So the idea is basically like every shot is a shotgun.
Whoa. How have we never talked about this? How have I never heard of this?
You need to have Scott Fawcett on this podcast. He is a G. And I know for a fact that tons and tons and tons of very successful players as in the pro ranks and college ranks are using Decade Golf to with great results. It's really one of the reasons that all these guys are coming out and having such success playing like such veterans already on the tour when they're so young is they're just abiding by the system and it just takes all the guesswork out of it. Like every time I step up, I know exactly where to aim.
It's like counting cards.
It a little bit is, except you still have to hit the shot.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, Finau, we were just talking about him. He, when asked, what's the best piece of advice you could give to an amateur is aim away from the flag, like aim at the middle of the green.
Yeah. I mean, it's he looks, this decade thing has found a way to use math to sort of quantify course management, but it really is using math to quantify how Tiger Woods plays a game.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's.
I mean, you can see 12 at Augusta. He's not aiming at that
12
thing.
At Augusta. They showed the 13. They showed the 2013 Players Championship on 17. He hit it 35 feet left of the flag. Like, that's just what he on 17. Like, that's just what he does, and he's always done it. So Fawcett's thing is you don't lower your scores by making more birdies. You lower your scores by making less bogeys.
Whoa!
And so you just don't put yourself in positions to do dumb shit.
I'm gonna find this thing.
It's truly.
And so is it something you, is it a book that you read?
It's an app. No, it's an app. So he's got all the content and videos on the app, and then you enter your stats throughout a round. He shows you how to do that, and you sort of start to generate your own stats
like
and
Spotify.
Sort of you see where see where your weaknesses are and see what
so is your personal number 9 from 150 and mine would be different?
No, that's pretty universal just based on I don't even know if that's the exact number, but it's universal based on, I think there's two versions of the app. There's the Elite and then there's the Foundations. And I don't know if those numbers are different based on,
is Elite like invite only?
No, it's just more in depth. It's more technical. Okay. There's just more to do kind of.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm interested in it because I didn't realize that one, it existed obviously, but I've always felt and said that course management is the difference between, you know, for a guy who's going to shoot 86 or 79.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
I mean, the idea is essentially playing. Look, you're playing by the book. Like if you play blackjack and you play by the book, the chances are over time that you win. This is just being the book for golf.
Yeah. Wow, that's really interesting.
It's tight. And then, like, don't get hammered. And then the two of those things are
that
like...
That doesn't help.
Yeah, no. She's just like, don't get wasted. And then play by the decade rules, and then you're good.
You've stopped drinking on the golf course.
Yeah.
What has that change been like for you?
Terrible. Terrible.
I've never drank on the golf course.
Oh, my God.
So I don't even
know
what
it's terrible. Everyone is out there having the time of their life, and I'm like... trying to shoot 74 like my fucking life depended on it.
Oh man. Do you prefer to gamble on the golf course?
I like a little action. I don't know. I think gambling is more of a high handicapper thing.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's a way for them to feel alive on the golf course or like their game means something. Not like it doesn't mean anything if you're a high handicapper, but like I'm competitive enough with myself trying to shoot under par or around par or whatever that day brings.
Right.
I don't need the extra action. Like I'm not going to feel better taking my friend's $100.
Right.
You know,
I felt pretty good about it.
Of course, you know, I felt
it was
amazing
also
about
Kipper.
It. I felt amazing about it. Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah. I love it.
And it's even better when they're not happy about giving the money. When they
when they look away, you know, when they kind of like look away or even better a Venmo is sweeter.
I haven't gotten a call from Kipper since then.
Yeah. No, he's pissed at you.
It's like we're not friends.
He is pissed at you.
You can confirm.
Yeah.
Can't confirm.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about I'm always gambling. It's a gamble for me anyway.
That's what I'm saying. You know? Every time you tee it up.
Every time the ball is in my peripheral vision, there's a bet going on in my head.
It feels risky. Like it feels, you know what I mean? Like I get enough adrenaline from just playing the game.
You've lived with golf your entire life, right? When did you start playing golf?
I started playing with my grandfather got me into the game when He was, when I was like 6 or 7 years old. So interesting story with my grandfather. He was a he sold textiles to like hospitals. He sold like linens and stuff to hospitals. And a lot of people in his world played golf. So he came to the game fairly late, in life, like well after he was well into his 50s. And so when I came along, him and I were sort of still almost like discovering the game at the same time, which was really sort of fun for the both of us. So I, my like first foursome was like him, like it was like me and like at like 8 years old and like a bunch of 80 year old guys, which I think if you know me makes perfect sense.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It was like, it was a great crew.
That's well, and how was your sense of style different then to now?
I was all Nike then, all Tiger.
100%.
All Tiger. Go to Nike Town in Chicago, clean out the section.
You have a lot of opinions on style in the PGA Tour. I feel like we can just scratch the surface here.
Sure.
Where do you even start when someone, I mean, because how often do you have this conversation? I feel like it's not as
not
much.
Not that
later.
Often. Really? I don't think anyone really wants to know.
I'm fascinated.
My biggest gripe is not on-course fashion. It's off-course fashion. These guys should be ashamed of themselves.
Tiger at Wimbledon.
I mean, Tiger at anywhere outside of golf. And even on the golf course, like some of it's questionable, but fine. Like,
you're not a wraparound fan? Is it the mock tee with the low? What is it?
I just don't understand. Like, you're going out in public. Why do they not have any respect for how they look?
And you're comparing like, them to basketball players, essentially.
I'm comparing them to every other athlete where it's like you're trying to flex as much as you possibly can whenever you possibly can.
I'm pretty sure I saw Tiger wearing his Masters jacket with a bathing suit.
I mean, that's pretty awesome.
You're okay with that?
You can't really knock Tiger. Like, I put Tiger in the category of Jordan where, like, what are you going to say to the guy? Like, there's so much.
He's on a different plane.
There's so much BDE there.
It just doesn't matter.
That, like, you can't, like, yeah, whatever. Like, yeah. Who cares? But I look into this younger generation of golfers and I'm just like, why are these guys, why is there no swagger? Like, why is there no anything? Like, Justin Thomas is the coolest dude ever on the golf course. So much swagger. But then you see him off the golf course. It's like, bro, why don't you use a stylist?
Yeah.
You're young. You're rich. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Like, be cool.
Like, lock it in.
Let's go. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Get going.
Monday through Sunday outfits.
Nothing should be an accident. Like, let's see it.
Do you think it has to do with the fact that they're sort of forced to wear a relatively uninteresting outfit most of their lives? And golf has been relatively fashionless?
But it doesn't have to be.
But I mean, the thing is it a product of that? You're right, it doesn't have to
be. But that to me would be like, okay, cage me on the golf course. When I get off the golf course, watch this. Like, I have $50 million. Like, check me out.
Yeah, look at what I'm going to do.
I just don't understand why there's no... The whole tunnel fashion and how like athletes have taken to fashion and become fashion icons. Like, how did that just miss golf?
Can you come up with one or two exceptions on the tour?
I think Finau does an okay job, but it's, I don't really know. I don't really know who else. I don't know. It seems so safe.
I'm trying to understand, like, is there a difference between, like, you know, golf and all the other sports? Like, well, they travel individually. They, you know, they need to like stretch before they play. So they're probably going to show up wearing like athletic wear to get ready to like stretch and do some physio.
Sure. But they also like, I think, yes, exactly. You can show up in something, you can show up in something different, but it's also like, they have more agency in what they wear than almost any other athlete. And they're on camera more. Like, they're on camera for 4 hours wearing whatever outfit it is. Like, put some Johns on. Like, let's see some shit.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's partly that they, you know, think about this. Like so when you're playing a team sport, you're craving individuality.
Yeah.
But when you're an individual sport, you're almost afraid of that spotlight and being picked apart. Like, I mean, Roy and wear the joggers and like it wasn't a hit.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That wasn't a hit. I mean, you look at your, you got your Jesper Parnoviks of the world. That guy took some risks. Yeah. I mean, there's been guys.
It almost had a more of a heyday back before, like even, you know, Daly's Reebok kind of windbreaker.
Poulter was doing some stuff. Wow. I mean, he was wild, wow, man, back in the day.
Wow.
In fact, wild man.
At the Museum of St. Andrews, there is a Old Course Museum. There is a life-size photo of couple photos of Ian Poulter on the wall, and it's all of his different pants, and it's intense.
Shocking. Yeah. I mean, he had the spiked hair. He was putting some looks down back in the day.
It's like, I don't even, they,
he was putting some looks.
I don't even know how do you sew that pattern together and not get ill. That's like a question I had.
It looked like a deconstructed, like, several couches.
Yeah. It wasn't a collage, but I wonder if people were offended, like if Englishmen were offended.
You know, I don't know. I guess, but at least he was trying something.
Yeah.
Like, kudos to him for trying something. Kudos to any of these people, any of these guys who are out there, you know, putting something together that is a little more interesting.
Poulter is one of the players that has really grown on me.
Yeah.
You know, there was a point where I really didn't like him, especially during Ryder Cup.
Well, he killed us. He killed us with that flat blade. He killed us. Guy was killer.
What? Ryder Cup would be very close to where you grew up this year. Maybe. How is it going to happen?
The Ryder Cup?
Yeah.
It can't.
No fans, no Ryder Cup.
How can it happen with no fans? That's the real captain's pick.
The 14th, the 13th, the 12th, the 12th man.
I don't know.
Basketball. Yeah. How do you think it will play out? Do you think it'd be like, we want to do it, and the players would be like, we don't?
I don't think anyone wants to do it.
Right.
I don't know. What's the point? I guess it's such a for the fans experience. Like, I guess I just don't see the point. Like, why not just wait? I understand revenue and TV revenue and all that stuff, but, like, just wait until it can be done the right way.
Yeah.
I don't see the rush. Like, I think, sure, go play whatever. Go play the, you know, Byron Nelson with no fans. Like, I don't think anyone's really getting riled up about the Byron Nelson.
Yeah.
But the Ryder Cup is such a specific product.
Yeah.
It creates such a specific culture and such a specific vibe that I just don't think, I think it's a worse product. And I just think you owe it to the people to put the best product out there. Like, it's also, like, hot take, it's a meaningless tournament. Like, it's an invention. Like, the PGA of America invented it to make money.
Right.
So, like, it's not a real, like, it's got history only in that it's been around, but, like, no one's, like, if you don't play the National Open, like, right, if you don't play the U.S. Open, like, that means something. But if you don't play the Ryder Cup, like, who really cares? Hot take.
Wow.
Hot take.
I mean, I'm not sure
it's manufactured. It is a manufactured event.
Well, to that degree, it all is.
Sure.
I mean, if you don't know golf and you see some guy walking around in an ugly green jacket that doesn't fit, you're like, meaningless.
Yes, to an extent, but...
Are you buying into the theology of the history of it? And for the Ryder Cup, obviously Europeans care more than we do because they're not only better at it, but it's more uniting.
But the Masters was... But the Masters was born out of, let's create an event for the elite golfers in this nation to determine a champion. You know what I mean? Like, let's create an invitation only cool. Like, I get how that's born. The Ryder Cup was a showcase. Yeah. Like, it was a, do you see, you know what I mean? Like, I just think there's a different, I don't know. It feels like maybe it's just me, but, like, I don't care about the Ryder Cup really that much.
I'm pretty sure it's just you.
I think it's cool.
I care.
I like watching it, but I'm not like, I don't know.
I don't care about too many professional golf things, but I will say that I will disrupt my normal hours if the Ryder Cup is being played in Europe.
I'll disrupt my normal hours if any golf tournament is on. Like, it doesn't matter for me. Of course, it's awesome. I want to see the best players in the world duke it out. But part of me wanting to watch that is what a great spectacle it is with the fans and with the vibe and with the energy and how much other people buy in.
Yeah. You've got one tournament, one Sunday round that you can watch of professional golf, no more, for the rest of your life. What is it?
Wait, sorry. Phrase the question. One that I'm giving up?
It's complicated. You can only watch one more round on TV of professional golf. Which round are you watching?
It's Sunday at Augusta.
Wow, 2019.
That particular round. Yeah. I was also...
I would not say that round.
I was also in a... I was in a unique viewing experience when I watched that on television.
I don't follow.
I was on a yacht.
Oh,
I was on a friend's yacht.
And you had a good connection.
And I had a perfect connection. So we were sailing in the ocean and watching the Masters. It was...
Which ocean?
One of them.
What? One
of the bigger ones.
Not even salty.
It was the Pacific.
Pacific. Water kind of clear.
That round was so inspirational. You don't feel that?
Look, for me, if I fast forward to 18, it feels a bit weird. I love Tiger. I know that I've, I love all of it. I cried.
Sure.
I cried. And I didn't cry during my other favorite round, but as a 4-hour thing, when I rewatched it, you know, when it came up this year. And I mean, I don't know. It's like 18 just made me feel weird. You know, with the overcut and then the recovery shot and then he didn't get up and down. I don't know.
I mean, the guy just he did what he had to do to win the golf tournament.
He won.
He had it won.
I don't know. For me, just strictly entertainment, it's going to be Troon, Phil, and Henrik.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That to me was because also I think no one really, I don't think had a favorite. No one had an expectation.
No, it kind of could have gone either way. And you were like, this is just, you're just watching two guys go berserk.
Yeah. And they both shot 63.
Yeah.
Like
it's awesome.
Insane.
It's awesome.
And then even to the very end where, and Henrik hits that 3-wood and it stops like a foot short of the fairway bunker. And you're like, that bunker is a bogey.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phil. Yeah. Making eagles all over the place, doing miracle shit. I respect that. I think there's something to be said about watching, first of all, the comeback, but secondly, just a guy that is so in control of his domain when so many variables exist.
Yeah.
It just was so impressive. It was chewing the gum. It was just the vibe of it. And also just the feeling that I got watching it, like... I agree. I didn't have a favorite in that Troon thing, but I had a very clear favorite in the Tiger round.
Right.
A very, very clear favorite. And so I was so invested. And then I just remember that feeling of like, oh my God, is this guy going to win the Masters? Like not knowing, like genuinely not knowing. The thing when they replayed the coverage and I watched it, the thing that I didn't realize was how many guys were.
Oh my God.
That leaderboard was stacked with studs. Brooks almost tied him. Cantlay was up there. DJ got it to 12. Like all these guys had gotten were close.
It was a party.
It was an absolute leaderboard party. And like anything could have happened. And then just like from the fog emerged the one man you wanted to see emerge. And it was just, there was something so that made me feel so childlike where I was just like, it can be, you can do it. And he can do it. Like all is right in the world again. This is the guy that we always used to see do it. And man, he did it again.
I suppose that's what really makes you a writer is that in a sense you might even look at 18 and say, well written, perfect. You showed us even in the midst of like greatness, major champion 15, that, you know, it's not about being perfect.
No, I mean, it's like... It's about being the best. It wasn't the flashiest round, but like the way he just wore out the fat side of every green. And, you know what I mean? Like he just wore it out and wore it out and wore it out and played away from flags and let other people make mistakes. It was as it was as vintage or classic Tiger as there ever has been. Just wait and outthink people and let everyone else, you know, puke on themselves. And
I wish there was a way that we could just like pull a memory and be like, all right. I'm going to watch the Masters, delete Masters.
Yeah.
From my brain. And I'm going to watch
it again.
And I turn it on. I'm like, oh, this is crazy. Like, and I already know, like I'm aware that I've deleted the memory of the Masters. So I'm watching it. I'm like, this is crazy. I have no idea who's going to win.
You can Eternal Sunshine the Masters out of, like, just, out of your mind.
Just get a little, like, you know, lotto ticket scratch off in the brain.
It was so thrilling. And honestly, rewatching it again, it was as if I didn't watch it the first time.
Yeah.
Because I had the same feelings of wanting him to win.
Right. All right, we're going to wrap it up in a sec. I kind of want you to describe to an alien Tiger Woods. Never met him. They don't even know what golf is. They don't know really anything about humanity. Yeah, I want you to take your time with it. Think about it. Like this could be an article.
This is
I'm recording.
This is
Do you want me to pause?
This is more than I thought I was going to have to do on this thing.
I think you're up with it. Do you want me to pause it?
When I agreed.
Can you stall and think about your answer at the same time?
This is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to kick the tires a little bit.
I mean, it's a complicated question. I've never asked it of anybody. The truth is, I like to think about when we have to describe something completely originally to someone who knows none of the sort of things that the explanation might hinge upon, is then we really see what it is. I'm just buying Daniel some time right here.
No, I think the way to describe Tiger Woods is a phenom in a game that is so hard to master, to dominate, to figure out. This is someone who has done truly whatever it has taken throughout his entire life, combined with an amount of talent that no one's ever seen before, to master the unmasterable, to dominate the undominatable, to levels that where he is seemingly unhuman. And I think that the most unbelievable thing about the person is when we got to see that he was human and then got to see that person then climb back to dominate the undominatable yet again against all odds.
Follow up. Is he different now on the golf course?
I can't tell. I don't know. I'm not close enough to it, but he seems pretty similar. I mean, I don't know. Like on Sunday, I wouldn't want to play with him. Would you? Do you want to step to that?
No. Everyone was like, you should do an ace cam video with Tiger. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I will never do that.
No. I mean, he's a larger than life, you know, one of those presences you can just sort of feel. It's a confidence that honestly we'll never even touch.
All right, thank you for joining me. Do you want followers? Do you want to tell people where you are? You don't have a social media. You have a social media, but you don't care.
I don't. No,
you're not trying to grow. You're not on here to sell juice or anything.
No, I'm D Libman on Instagram.
My parents will follow you.
Yeah, I'm D Libman on Instagram. If you want to see pictures of me hitting a ball and
the odd golf course
and my wife.
Do you have a swing video on there?
Yeah,
I think so. I've shot a couple swing videos of you.
Yeah, we can put something up.
How many? You have one hole in one?
Well, I have two. One hole in one.
Man, and you have it on a great hole.
Yeah, and a bunch of other. Oh, and I have an albatross.
Oh, really? When?
In high school, in a tournament.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Club yardage?
It was a 5-iron from, I think, like in the 180-yard range. Sick. I'd cut the corner on this par 5 and then hit it in.
And would it just roll up or did it just like hit the stick?
No, it was wet. It was like in the fall and it just like basically just like mashed in.
Amazing. Well, thanks for joining me. That was entertaining. And that's all I got.
Yeah, man. That's all I got. Oh, watch Black Monday on Showtime.
Black Monday on Showtime. Let's not end yet. We never really talked about your other life, which honestly I don't know that much about. All we've done is play golf. I'm like your side hustle.
Yeah, I write television and movies. That's what I do.
It's cool. Good talk.
No, yeah, it's the most. It's the dumbest way to make a living possible.
Are you kidding? No, you serve the entire planet in a time, especially now, but even in normal times, when entertainment is basically like a core necessity.
Yeah, I don't feel that way. it's a pretty scary job.
Why?
I don't know. Just putting. It's the same way you feel like when you're playing golf with people you've never played golf with before. You're putting yourself sort of out there. It's very naked.
Scariest part is
submitting a first draft of something to someone it's always terrifying.
And then how long does it take them to give you their feedback usually?
Pretty instant. I mean, a couple few days.
Okay.
I don't know. Trying to sell something. It's always terrifying. Every project is like a round of golf where it's like they all have their picadillos. They're all their difficult right. things, the things you love about them, the things that you wish you could replicate, the things that you made a mistake and will learn from.
You're in a very small group of writers that have actually had something produced. And now it's been what? How many projects have you produced? Like four, three?
I created one show that we created, my brother and I created ourselves with two other friends, called Champagne Ill on YouTube Premium, with Adam Pally and Sam Richardson. But we've written for, you know, dozens of shows now. Started on a show called Happy Endings that people liked, and then I did The Mick, and I did Black Monday. I just did a show called Solar Opposites that's on Hulu from the guys that created Rick and Morty, which is really fun. I've done all kinds of fun things and worked with all kinds of fun people and try to, you know, learn from all of them.
And what's next?
What is next? I'm doing The Kenan Show on NBC right now, Kenan Thompson. We're writing that, and I have shows in development at Fox and at the Peacock.
Okay. Favorite comedian
of all time?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Or just right now?
Rodney Dangerfield.
Really? Stand up.
I mean, my favorite like comedic actor. God, this is impossible.
It's a hard one.
I'm a huge Danny McBride fan.
Oh yeah.
He can do no wrong in my book.
Right.
I don't know. Ask me tomorrow. It could be different.
All right. We'll ask you tomorrow. All right, we're going to play Santa Anita.
Yeah. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
6:30 a.m.
Bring the mic. Bring the mic.
Thanks for joining, Dan. I'm looking forward to being again.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks. Precision Pro. One advantage that low handicap golfers have that has nothing to do with the mechanics of their swing. It's that they approach every shot with all the right information. The more informed you are, the better your decision-making process is before you even swang that club. I rely on Precision Pro rangefinders to give me the precise information as I make my way through 18 holes, sometimes 36, MJ. I've carried several of their rangefinders around the world with me, and they've all been easy to use, incredibly fast, and most importantly, it gives me the exact yardage so I can choose the right club. You know, you need those two things. It's a relationship, folks. You can't just hit the same club on every shot, and you can't just hit the same yardage. All golfers need a rangefinder that they can trust. And I'm telling you that my boys over there in Cincinnati, I trust them. And I'm just saying that the Precision Pro is a brand I trust. My listeners also receive $20 off any of their great rangefinders. Just use the promo code ERIC at checkout for an extra $20 off, ERIK, to add to one of their award-winning rangefinders to your bag this summer. You can even put it in your pocket. I do that too. It actually is. It's got a magnet too, and it goes onto your cart. But if you put it on the cart, you might forget it. I've done it, folks. Don't do it to yourself. Don't play yourself like that. Best of all, Precision Pro Golf is the only rangefinder that offers free lifetime battery replacements. So not only are you getting a rangefinder, you're signing up for a lifetime service. It's a commitment. It is a lifetime commitment. You literally hand in hand with Precision Pro. Well, I'm not sure where that came from. Anyway, it's all part of the industry-leading customer service that Precision Pro Golf delivers to every customer. Booyah! Swing with confidence, hit more greens, and I'm going to do that one more again. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. Later. TaylorMade, folks. I got to tell you, the first golf clubs that ever went in my little old hands were TaylorMade Burner Oversize. They had some crusty old grips that I redid myself at risk of my own fingertips with the razor, and I got high because I don't know if you've ever re-gripped your clubs, but you become an inhalant addict because you're putting like really noxious stuff. Don't grip your own clubs unless you really want to. Anyway, mad respect. Give me a fist bump whenever I see you. I grip my own clubs. I put the grips on them myself. I saved. How much did you save? I mean, you could save money. You save money because I think you put them on. It's like $20 each. And you buy the grips yourself. It's like $8. By the way, regripping 14 clubs, I mean, that's like a lot. Go buy TaylorMade's instead. They come with grips. My favorite TaylorMade edition now, obviously the Sim Max I'm playing, is a monster club. One of the many things Tiger Woods have and I in common is playing the Sim. But also, I kind of love the wedges. The raw-faced wedges, MG. I both love the high toe in matte black. I also have a matte black shaft. I know you didn't ask, but I went ahead and told you. Anyway, TaylorMade, my favorite thing about TaylorMade beyond the incredibly performing equipment is the people that make this company up. The band of brothers down here, the band of sisters, the family in Carlsbad really, really gets behind what we do, and that means it's important for you to get behind what they do. So go support TaylorMade, everybody, and hit them straight or just don't. Just hit them with TaylorMade's, though. Just get some. Just stop messing around with all the others. Hit them straight with TaylorMade, but just hit TaylorMade at least. I mean, if you're not, I mean, just go. I mean, what are you doing? Just pause the pod. Go on TaylorMade. What's their website? They don't even need a website. Just go find TaylorMade ASAP. There should be, what? What I play? I play Studio is asking me to play. I play the P760s, 4 through pitch. Then I've got the milled grind raw face 50, 54, and 58. And then I rock. I'm in between the Gapper and the Sim Hybrid right now. I play the 2 Gapper. I've got a steel shafted 6.5 Project X in that one, as with all the irons. And then on the driver, I have the Sim Max with a 9 degree. I'm still working on getting my numbers on that. I don't really know. I got the 10.5 and the 9. We're going to do a little experimentation. Maybe, honestly, you know what? Whatever one I don't use, how about it's yours? How about that? I don't know how we're going to manage this. Head over to the Instagram account. Get ready for the old giveaway of the driver that I can't hit. Anyway, TaylorMade's the family, folks. All right, folks. What's better than saving money on premium golf balls? Saving money on premium golf balls that you can customize with any logo you want. Whether it's your dog or your lawyer, customize your vice balls at vicegolf.com. Also, podcast listeners get free customization using the code EAL2020. Hit them up. All right, folks, Adidas. Adidas is pushing the boundaries once again in golf footwear. And if you've been counting, I haven't been counting. It's a lot of times, but they're doing it again. So whatever many times it's been, it's at one. So you need to check this out. It's called the Code Chaos, all capitals. The footwear team let me know that this shoe is meant to break down traditional stereotypes and make a statement that there doesn't have to be one look for the sport when it comes to golf footwear. It's athletic and bold from a style standpoint, but this shoe is seriously packed with technology. It's spikeless, but beyond just being tested with guys like DJ and Xander, they did heat map studies. Heat map. That means they know where you are right now. They literally know. And watch, I'm telling you, you're going to get an ad for Adidas footwear in your feed. I'm telling you, and it's not me. I don't know if it's them. It's probably Xander, not DJ. Xander's got an X in his name, so he's a little more sinister. Even though I would probably feel more likely that DJ would really, he could do some damage with the club to my face. So to see how players shift their weight, they use this heat mapping technology to see where they shift their weight, but also where you are physically at this current moment throughout the swing. So anyway, with all that info, they created a new traction system called Twist Grip. Twist Grip. That's spelled the way it sounds. Anyway, so the players get the grip they need exactly where they need it, and this is an ad lib, and when they need it. I just added that. It's waterproof. Waterproof is key. Let's get honest, folks. If you want a waterproof shoe, unless you live in the desert, you can wear sandals or moccasins. But for everybody else, you need the waterproof shoe. So hit up the code CHAOS. It's waterproof, lightweight, and obviously has the boost cushioning, which we all love. There's even a high top BOA version, which I'm not sure I'm man enough to rock, but John Rahm is. But he's also, he's very, very good at golf. We can all agree. These things are next level. So get yourself a pair. Head over to adidas.com/codechaos. Spelled the way it sounds. Although the C-H in chaos is sounds more like a K. So it's C-O-D-E-C-H-A-O-S. And shop the styles and follow Adidas Golf on Instagram and Twitter for all the latest news from Les Trois Stripes. That's three stripes, folks. All right, one more ad read. I'll probably do another one after this. Jones Sports Co., folks. If you want the bag that I rock, it's the Jones Sports Bag. They got the Player Series. They got the original. What are the other? What's the other models they got? The stand bags? We're pulling it up in the studio, folks. But here's the thing. Jones, if you haven't seen the video on YouTube yet, please check it out. We went up there, visited with them. We designed a lot of cool stuff. We're going to be designing more stuff. We have two bags on the Random Golf Club site that have the Random Golf Club script on it. The Utility Trooper is the info I'm getting of the name of the other bag that I like. It's got the stand. It's got the stand bag. I also I mostly rock the original, which is based on a design from the 70s. Was his name Jones? His name was Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones and me. Now that guy got in a lot of trouble for some, what's that? Taxi cabs. But the guy who sang the song, Mr. Jones, he's gotten a lot of trouble. Don't want to talk about him. But Mr. Jones, not that the song is written about, was a taxi driver in New York. He made a golf bag out of the upholstery in his taxi. And that's where Jones has come from. So they're obviously the comfortable shoulder strap on the original series is what I love. Got a lot of cargo space and you got three pockets to hold all your clubs. And you look basically like a badass. If you don't have a significant other at the start of the round, you will have one at the end. Am I right? Watch out. It's you know, that's the studio here says, get a Jones bag. I'm not going to say get laid, but basically that's what's going to happen. I mean, I didn't say it. You said it. You heard it. I didn't say it. Jones Sports Go, everybody. Love them. All right. Whoop, folks. Whoop. W-H-O-O-P. Think you know what I'm talking about. You've seen Rory wearing it. You may have seen me wearing it, and I'm pretty much into this wearable device, wearable technology, wearable. I like it. At first, I was like not sure if I was going to like having this thing on my wrist, but I'm into it, mostly because of the incredible amount of information that it gives me about me and my life and how to perform better. Like, I'm not going to ever be some amazing athlete, but I do like getting this feedback from my body. So basically, it has inside of it this crazy light that reads not only your heart rate, but all sorts of other things about your body, mostly the time in between heartbeats, the heart rate variability, that's key. Anyway, it provides personalized insights on the performance of your sleep and how recovered your body is and how much stress you put on your body throughout the day from your workouts and the normal stressors of life. Big key takeaway, walking 18 holes, that's a workout, folks. No joke. So anyway, when I get up, I look at my Whoop score. I try to see how I slept last night. And I've tried to incorporate takeaways to get better sleep and especially when traveling and stuff like that, because rest is really important. And the quality of sleep is really key. So, you know, it has all these, you know, suggestions for getting better sleep. The biggest takeaway is consume a lot of water. Also, I've started exercising more. This thing plugs in great to all of my exercise routines, and I can see exactly where I'm at my max heart rate. It's got a built-in feature with a strain coach that it gives you target exertion goals and work out optimally for the level of intensity. It basically is a personal assistant for your working out. And folks, big deal for you guys. They're offering 15% if you use the code EAL at checkout. That's 15% off whoop.com and enter EAL at checkout to get your discount. Sleep better, recover faster, and train smarter. Optimize your performance with Whoop. It's custom tailors to your body. It takes like a little bit of time to get to know you, and then it knows you. And it's fun because I've got a lot of friends that use it and we talk about it. I'm like, yo, what was your sleep score last night, bro? And basically it's how early did you go to bed and how early did you wake up and did you get distracted while sleeping? It tracks all four stages of your sleep, slow, wave, REM, light, and when you wake up. And it can tell you how much sleep you've actually gotten down to the minute. So it's like the first thing I do when I wake up is I just check it and I'm like, yo, how did we do last night? And I can tell, I can notice the difference now. And it's kind of like that awareness wasn't really there before using the Whoop strap. The Whoop journal allows you to track the decisions that you make during the day and the impact that those have on your recovery. And basically, guys, Whoop can help anyone perform better, whether it's preparing for a golf match, race, meeting, etc. Whoop can help plan out your day and make smarter lifestyle decisions to help you feel better than ever. And I can say I have definitely improved in a lot of areas there, whether even now when I walk 18, like I feel better, you know what I mean? And I think part of that is you're just focusing on your body's performance. And this is the tool that gives you the insight to do that. So please go check it out. Support the people that support us. Whoop.com, W-H-O-O-P, enter code EAL at checkout to get 15% off.